Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm your host, Pat Lencioni. I'm joined by the full crew, Bo Johnson. He's back from his vacation to Mexico. How you doing, Bo?
Great to be back.
I thought you were going to say something in Spanish, but you know that was too much to ask.
Missed your opportunity. Yep.
There you go. How you doing, Cody? Broken leg healing?
Muy bien, gracias.
There it is. And Tracy.
Good. I'm happy to be at work today.
Good. Four of us on mic. We've got Karen and Matt in the studio. Thank you for being here. And Cody, what is today's topic?
Not for nonprofit.
Not for nonprofit. You might be looking at that thinking, what does that mean? And it's supposed to be a little confusing because is it a not-for-profit, a nonprofit, a not-for-nonprofit? What does it mean? Here's what we're going to be talking about today. See, there are various generalizations that exist when it comes to working in and running a nonprofit versus a for-profit company. And many of those generalizations, unfortunately, are true. However, the very best companies of either type combine elements of both kinds. And in the end, the financial or the financial status or legal status of an organization is less than its ability to tap into the best of both kinds. And that's what we're going to talk about today.
An interesting topic, Pat, because one, many of us have worked at nonprofits and for-profits. And then I've heard you sort of, you know, talk about this concept and the dynamic between the two of them and what some of them do better than nonprofits or for-profits. So this will be fun because I think there's, like you said, lessons that each can learn from the other.
Right. And most of our listeners, many of them work for nonprofits. We know a lot of people listen. Many of them volunteer or donate to them or have worked in both kinds. So I think most people have an understanding of the difference. And I think one of the things we can talk about right now, let's talk about some of the unfortunate, not stereotypes, but tendencies of each type of organization. Let's start with nonprofits. Bo and Cody, you have both actually been employed by a nonprofit. So what are some of the things that people will say, yeah, at nonprofits, this tends to be the reality?
I think the first thing that jumps to my mind is in the social sector, and a lot of nonprofits are in that sector, there tend to be people that are motivated to do that work because they care about the mission. They tend to be really good people. And they also tend to be underpaid. And for some combination of those reasons, we're not paying them as much. They tend to be a really nice person. Accountability is really low or tends to be pretty low in the nonprofit space.
What do you mean by accountability?
Well, I mean that we don't confront one another's bad behavior as frequently, but we also don't reevaluate whether we should be doing the things we're doing as often. Do you resonate with that, Cody? And your experience there, I know you're on the board of several nonprofits too.
I love that you led with the accountability piece because I do feel like there's this sentiment that like, oh, well, we all joined because we care about this cause. So, and you're giving, in some ways, it feels like the presupposition is that you're sort of entering into the market at a lower place. So we don't have to hold each other quite as accountable to that thing. Like, in other words, like you've already made the sacrifice, the kind of position it as a sacrifice. So I don't want to stir or rock the boat at all. Like you're here because you care about whatever we're doing. And I don't need to get in your face about whether you're performing well or not performing well.
Yeah. And maybe part of accountability is we're not pushing quite as hard, pushing each other, pushing ourselves. Like we got to do more. We got to do more. Which of course seems crazy because the work so many nonprofits do is so important. But there seems to be a sense of settling for, well, that's good enough because after all, we're not paid that much and what would we expect?
I think there's also something of a lot of work at nonprofits is a grind. You're working with vulnerable populations. You're working for missions that really matter. If you don't do this work, you wonder who might. And so I know a lot of folks, maybe if you work at a nonprofit, you would resonate with this. The work is so hard. You see the work your colleagues doing is so important. It's hard to then confront them about something they might be doing poorly because it feels like they're already carrying so much.
And it's heavy.
It's heavy.
It's heavy. Right. So, I mean, some of these are negative stereotypes or expectations and some are positive, but it's very real. So what tell us a little bit about your experiences. Bo, churches are nonprofits. You've done a lot of work in churches. Cody, you worked at a nonprofit before you joined here. What were some of the ways that these things played out?
When you asked that question, Pat, I think that there, I like to think of companies, for-profit or non-profit, about impact. We talk about impact in our own world of work, like when we're evaluating even our financial, you know, that we talk about impact or the finances being a downstream in symptom of impact. So I think that when you're in a nonprofit, there's a really simple, that you feel like you're driven towards impact. Like you have this, you get drawn to the organization because of the impact that it will go, you know, like the impact you're having, whether it's feeding kids or building wells or raising money for a certain disease, you know, all of those things are directly impactful. And so there's this sentiment of like, I love what Bo said. I think a lot of that work is really difficult. And so people tend to settle and not hold each other to the highest standard. So you think like, oh, there's this impact that we're having. We don't need to be as excellent in what we're doing, which is kind of a confusing thing because you would think that they'd be even more about that.
Yeah, it almost, as you were saying that, I was thinking like, but because the stakes are very high and the impact can be very high, you wouldn't think that there would ever be an occasion to settle. And yet, I mean, and you think about a church, when I work with churches, I say, hey, you do the most important thing of any organizations. So why do you settle sometimes for less high standards when it comes to customer service or welcoming people or even the quality of what you do?
And I think generally, the people that I know working in nonprofits, and we interact with people in nonprofits almost every day in our family in this season of our life, is they're not settling in terms of their character and they're not settling in terms of their intention. But I think it's a lot of nonprofits fail to identify what they're going to measure. And so what we end up doing is saying, yeah, their intention is really good, or it feels like we're really making a difference. And we're not actually measuring to see, are the individuals who are working here contributing to the number that's important that they contribute to? And are the programs that we're continuing to offer actually working?
Yeah, but see, and that's the interesting thing about this. And by the way, there's some amazing nonprofits out there that we work with, and some of people are listening and they're like, we don't do that. And we're like, yeah, that's why you're some of the best nonprofits in the world. But too often what happens in a nonprofit, I think we could measure it, but I think we feel like, I don't want to make this volunteer or this underpaid person feel bad for saying that you need to do better. I should just be glad that they're doing what they're doing, because I think sometimes nonprofits, the measurements are very clear. I mean, you're serving people. It's like, how many people are we going to feed? How many lives are we going to save? How many people are going to come to grow in their faith? I actually don't think it's because it's hard to measure. I think it's often because measurement might take away from our feeling good about doing something that's idealistic. And so that could crush somebody to think, hey, you're doing a good thing, but you're just not doing it very well. And to tell somebody that it's doing a good thing, that they're not doing it well, feels crushing.
Well, we assume that it's going to be crushing to them if we measure it. In truth, it's actually very life-giving. When somebody can see that they are making a meaningful contribution towards something that matters, it is almost always energizing, not deflating.
Yeah, like at the Make-A-Wish Foundation, they hold their volunteers to such high standards that the volunteers there love working there because they know it matters and there's a lot expected of them. And really good volunteers are drawn there because they actually treat their volunteers like they're paid a lot of money. And so people want to volunteer there. Whereas if you lower the standards because you're afraid high standards for a volunteer will turn people away. Well, yeah, it will. It'll just turn the volunteers that aren't that committed away. And you kind of have to have the courage to do that.
Right. I love when I've heard you say that in for-profit boardrooms, Pat, and not-for-profit boardrooms, where you talk about this sort of idea of where you hold the standards for volunteers in particular. And there is this sentiment both in the nonprofit space, but even as you kind of enter into that volunteer conversation is, hey, because there's a sacrifice, because you're giving your time or you're not making as much money, we have to make it easier for you. you know, like, oh, hey, this person is volunteering their time at their church. We should make it as easy on them as possible. Mm. When that actually produces the exact opposite results that you're hoping for, which is, wow, hey, I know you're busy. I know that you're really gifted. Let's actually make it harder for you to do this work and make it meaningful rather than lower the bar.
Huh. Yeah. So many times I volunteered at church, the standards were so low that I just didn't go. I didn't want to do it anymore because it felt like this is not a good use of my time, which is ironic because I think they thought they were going to be attracting more volunteers that way.
Yep, totally. I'll say, even as you were asking that question, Pat, I thought of a specific role that I had in a nonprofit when I was younger, which was organizing these community events. And I didn't have that wisdom at the time, but the first few unsuccessful events that I had where I was relying on volunteers, I tried to make it as easy on them as possible to say, like, hey, you don't have to come to every meeting. And I really just need you to kind of be the treasurer of this event. And we can kind of mold it and make it work in your schedule. Whereas later in that role, when I was like, hey, if you're going to commit to this, you need to come to every meeting. You need to be prepared at every meeting. We're going to make this event as excellent as we can. Those events and connecting it to the impact that we were having at those events actually bolstered and made those events more successful.
You know what I just thought of? People that in nonprofits often are afraid that their employees or their volunteers are going to quit. And so they're constantly trying to placate them, which is ironic, and it's not their intention, but that's what they're doing. And in fact, they end up getting what they behave for.
A theme of what we've been talking about so far is mediocrity, that there is sort of an acceptance of mediocrity in the nonprofit space, or at least a perceived acceptance of that. And I'm curious if you think I'm totally off my rocker here, but I'm thinking about the exceptional nonprofits that I've been around and compared to the ones that are a little bit more mediocre. And I think sometimes in nonprofit world, we assume people know why they're here and they know why the mission matters. But actually, in a nonprofit space, the leader has to convey the mission as often as possible. And we think, oh, of course they know why they're here. We're here to feed hungry kids, or we're here to educate, or we're here to do whatever. No, as the leader, you have to still step on the gas. And if you don't, I think about that phrase, familiarity breeds contempt. But I actually think the way that it goes is familiarity breeds unfamiliarity, which breeds contempt. We get so used to being in this space, we're not connecting what we're doing back to the core mission.
Yeah, you know, when I was on the board of the Make-A-Wish Foundation, and I was on the board, okay, so I wasn't, you know, with the kids on their trips, which is the very best part of it. But even at the board meetings, I said, we don't want to come here and have a board meeting. Every board meeting would start with a wish story. And because they wanted to remind us, as board members, boring people sitting around a room trying to make decisions, why we were doing what we're doing. And sometimes in nonprofits, we assume people remember, we don't remind them. And if you don't remind somebody there, they start to feel pretty gross about, they're like, I don't even think about the people we're serving. And so like, you're right. We talk about over-communication, Bo. If you run a nonprofit, you better be doubling on your over-communication, because to fail to do that is to take away the primary motivator, as it should be. And I'm really glad you mentioned mediocrity. It's a word I just wrote down and circled before you said it. I think the great fear that we have and should have in nonprofits is that mediocrity sets in. That is the poison of the stereotypical, if you will, nonprofit.
And I will say this, of the nonprofits I've been around or I'm on the board of, the ones that hold their people to a highest standard of excellence and constantly remind them of why, like, hey, we need you to perform at the absolute highest and best level because our mission is so important. Those are the ones that are actually doing really well.
Absolutely. Now let's shift to the for-profit. Okay. So for-profits pay. And one of the problems that for-profits have is that they can come to the conclusion that their people are coin-operated, that, that pay is the primary motivator. And so a lot of times what companies that are, and I've in consulting, I've always seen this, people are like, well, their compensation should be tied to their performance. And I'm a big believer in that. But they can overdo it to think that every time you motivate them to work harder, it needs to be tied to a specific financial benefit for them. Mm-hmm. And that's not necessarily the case, because what it does is it diminishes for them the other motivations. It kind of crowds out the other reasons why people work. And that's a tragedy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really resonate with that. Part of the reason I resonate with that is I just reread your book. The title I have in front of me is The Three Signs of a Miserable Job. I know that you renamed it.
The Truth About Employee Engagement.
Yes.
Yeah, good. It was a quiz to make sure you knew what the title was. No, I forgot. And I love in the book, it's my favorite fable, and it's about a pizza shop. And everybody should go and read it. And this guy who steps in to manage a pizza shop, I promise I won't spoil all of the ending, helps everybody figure out who it is that they serve. This isn't a nonprofit. They're not curing cancer. They're serving pizza to families when they're done skiing. But every person who works there deserves to know that their work is serving somebody. And I think we miss that in the for-profit sector when we think everything is transactional.
Hmm.
Yeah, we remove the idealism. And idealism is a part of every job in the world. Every job has an element of idealism, which is usually about serving somebody else in need. And too often in for-profits, we're almost embarrassed to talk like that because we're thinking, well, they work here because it's a for-profit and they want to maximize their income. So to appeal to their idealistic sense of what they're doing might make them feel like I'm doing that to avoid having to pay them more.
Well, I this is why I think, Pat, so often when we go into for-profit companies and help them clarify the answers to their six critical questions, you have to have an answer to question number one, which is, why do we exist? And when companies and founders and the leadership team have a really clear idea of why the company exists, and oftentimes it's tied to, hey, we exist because our software helps enable, you know, doctors to do their, you know, there's an impact that's related to the why do they exist? They don't, there's not a lot of companies we've been in, Pat, where their answer to that is we exist to maximize profits. Almost every company or the majority of companies are, hey, we started this because there was a pain or a problem or some way we could serve the world. And we happen to, because we're generating value around that, that is what makes it a for-profit. So when you're solving that problem, I love the idea of the leader leaning more into that and not saying, hey, we exist to make more money. This is the real reason behind that.
Right. Karen just wrote a note to me here and it makes so much sense. Like the best companies are mission-driven, whether they are, there's a mission, there's a purpose, there's a reason. And that's true whether you're for-profit or not-for-profit. And when you overemphasize the fact that for-profit means you make more money, you lose that sense of mission. And so this gets down to the answer to this big question. Every company should run with all the good things of a nonprofit and all the good things of a for-profit. And I've heard people say you should treat your employees in a for-profit as though they were volunteers, which means you should appeal to their sense of why what they're doing matters, why it makes others happier, why it makes them better, and why the environment there should be really great. And every nonprofit should run with the same sort of standards of excellence that a for-profit would have, so that when their results turn down, even though it might not be financial, they have the same level of angst that a for-profit company whose financials turned down would experience.
I love that.
Really good. I remember Jim Collins, who wrote the book Good to Great, he wrote a little addendum called Good to Great in the Social Sectors. And I believe what prompted it is so many people asking him, how does this apply to nonprofits? How does this apply in the social sectors? And he had talked with lots of nonprofits who had heard, oh, I'm supposed to learn to run my nonprofit like a business. And of course, I'm paraphrasing here, but Jim would say, no, most businesses are run really poorly. Don't run your nonprofit like that. He said, instead, embrace the idea of greatness. And I think that both nonprofit and for-profit can do that. Have it be a great place to work. And for the nonprofit space to say, we can run this organization really, really well because our mission matters.
Yes. And you know, it's so interesting. The problem is, in a nonprofit, people have a very clear single standard for greatness, which is profit, which is money. which is like, it's like a scoreboard with one score on it, and that's the team score. When you work at a nonprofit, you have multiple things on your scoreboard, and it's not as easy to have a singular focus. And so what happens is they can kind of justify, well, we raised a lot of money this quarter for in fundraising, or we served more people, or, well, we got into this new area. The benefits of a for-profit are just that they have this single boring thing called profit. Now, it doesn't get me out of bed in the morning, and it doesn't get most people out of bed in the morning, but at least it's clear. Mm-hmm. Whereas in a nonprofit, you can kind of excuse away. I mean, if you think about a church, you know, a church can say, well, how many ministries do we have? How many people attend services? How much money do they put in the basket? How many volunteers do we have? You can almost look for your favorite quantification and justify what you're doing by that. And so there's a lot more wiggle room, I think.
I think in particular, that's really true for nonprofits where they are donation-based, because what can start to happen is, with a lack of clear vision, everybody who is donating starts to believe that they get to have a say in what the vision is. And that's one other way that you can start to get mission drift. And it just comes back to, for the nonprofit space, leaders, that answer to number one, why do we exist, has to be so clear and in front of everybody all the time.
Boy, Bo, that's a huge point, because nobody donates to the Make-A-Wish Foundation or volunteers because they want them to change what they do. They're so clear what they do. But so many people that volunteer at a church or nonprofits that haven't really gotten clear focus and strategy think, oh, I'm going to go in there and get a board seat, or I'm going to go in there and say, with this money I'm giving you, I'm giving myself permission to change what you're doing. And that is super, super dangerous. It would be like a company selling their product to a customer and then having that customer get to sit on the board and change their strategy, which no company should ever do. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating point. I hadn't thought about that. The point we're making here is, let's make sure that all of our organizations act like the best nonprofit and the best for-profit. Mm-hmm. And let's make sure that we're understanding the pitfalls that either side of that aisle can encounter. I think that's the message of today, right? I think that's enough. Yep. All right, we have an unpaid ad today.
We were going to do that movie you and I like, Pat.
That's right. We're going to make an appeal to people to watch a movie. It's somewhat about the workplace, and it's about life and jobs and careers and decisions. It's really great. It's called Locke, L-O-C-K-E. Who's the actor, Cody?
Tom Hardy.
Tom Hardy, one of the best actors, because you never remember he's in a movie, because he really does get lost in the character. So what did you like about the movie, Cody?
Well, I think I read one review of it before, and it says it will challenge what you believe to be a cinematic piece. And what is amazing about this movie is the entire thing takes place in a vehicle, in like one sort of scene. Now, they're bringing in characters and phone calls and other things and some recall moments. But the fact that they could pull off an entire movie in the context of a car that is compelling enough to watch for the entirety, to me, in and of itself, that the fact that I got through the entire movie is in and of itself enough of an endorsement, you know?
And I will tell you, I watched the movie twice in 2 days, because I saw it and then I had to have my wife watch it with me because it was so compelling. So it's a fabulous movie. Some of the best acting I've ever seen. And the commentary on work and life and decisions is crazy. So Locke, L-O-C-K-E, it's a great movie. We'd love you to go out there and watch it and benefit from it. And that's the end of our podcast today. We want to thank everybody for listening. We love doing these, and we'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.